Breaking and Entering, written by Don Gilmore, read for you by Carrie Richards, published by Biblioasis in Windsor, Ontario. But nature, spent and exhausted, takes lovers back into herself, as if there were not enough strength to create them a second time. Raina Maria Rilke, Duino Elegies. The desire to make off with the substance of others is the foremost, the most legitimate, passion nature has bred into us and, without doubt, the most agreeable one. Donatien Alphonse François, Marquis de Sade. 1. Prologue. At night, the street regained its innocence, everything still and stored away. A few lights were on, mostly for security. The people asleep, the air heavy and unmoving. The sound of air conditioning units, rattling, wheezing, struggling, a symphony. A few cats moving languidly, the line of cars dark and foreign. There were so few lawns now. Everyone had prairie grass or Japanese maples or ajua, straw-colored and dry. Once inside, you saw the furniture, the incomplete set of dishes, the big screen. In the basements were discarded toys and the faint smell of mold. The third floor is abandoned, impossible to keep cool in this weather. The shoes lined up near the door, always more than anyone could practically use. The keys in a ceramic bowl they'd brought back from Seville or Istanbul. Coats for every kind of weather, except what they had right now, lined up on hooks waiting for fall. On the refrigerators, reminders, and clever quotes held by magnetic bumblebees. On the calendars, days circled in red. A week of half-read newspapers. Who has the time? Inside the cupboards were well-intentioned juicers and panini makers, idle for a year. You needed to look farther than that, into the drawers that held vibrating toys, into the hard drives that held plans and bank accounts and fetishes, into closets containing expensive dresses, bought on sale and never worn, revealing journals and medical histories and old love letters tied quaintly with string. Finally, you had to look into those sleeping heads, thoughts of adultery, wayward urges, unnamed panic, standing naked in front of the school assembly, again, trying to fly but having some trouble, pursued by something lumbering and dangerous, the fear of poverty, of failure, the future, afraid for their vulnerable children and their suddenly vulnerable parents, and the pragmatic nagging, did I turn off the stove? You did. And finally, a longing that was impossible to name, an ache that starts in your heart and spreads, waves of something, a heavy feeling that brings tears, a mix of nostalgia, old Yeller getting it in the puss again, and sadness, and unmoored memories floating just out of reach. Every house held this, but you only took what was valuable. That was the key. Deadish. There was a woman in Boston who thought she was dead. Bea had read about it in the morning paper. She had a rare psychiatric disorder, Cotard's delusion, where she denied her existence. Faced with overwhelming evidence to the contrary, her husband, daughter, her reflection, she remained unconvinced she was alive. Because of the current heat wave, she thought she was in hell. Her husband showed her their wedding pictures, a mortgage statement, a photo of their daughter's communion, and she just shook her head, no. And standing in the gallery, looking at Warhol's Elvis print for perhaps the 30th time, Bea wondered if she had a touch of Cotard's. The gallery was almost deserted. It was still morning, a weekday, just her and the king. There were four Elvises, two in fading black and white, two in lurid color, all aiming a six-gun straight at her. He was wearing what looked like lipstick, on the right side of the law. If this version could have seen the bloated, sequined version, wobbly on quaaludes, singing Unchained Melody in his final concert,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?